Welcome to the Tell Janice Radio Show, where you will hear inspiring stories about life, love, and labor from amazing women to help lift you up. Now, here's your host, Janice.
Thanks very much, and welcome to the show. I'm so happy that you're listening, and I'm sure you're going to learn a lot from our guest today. But before we get started, I wanted to remind you that if you know of a fabulous female that you would like me to give a shout-out to with a few words of encouragement, acknowledgement, or congratulations, please let me know their names by clicking on the link at telljanice.com.
My next guest is Joanne Duggan of Plan C Strategies. She's an emotional intelligence expert out of Lexington, Massachusetts. And Joanne is in the business of helping people help themselves to achieve authentic success and outrageous happiness. Her topic today is a second part of a three-part series by Joanne about fear and worry. Today she will be briefly reviewing the first part, which was a few weeks ago, and then today is how do you change worry? Welcome to the show, Joanne.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I'm very anxious to get on to the second part of this three-part series. Can you start with telling our listeners a little bit about yourself for those that missed the first two that you've been on?
Yes, I'm a psychotherapist by training. I have a master's degree in counseling psychology. I've been in private practice since 1988. I was put on the planet to do what it is that I do. I feel very lucky in the fact that it was always very clear to me what it was that I was supposed to do. And so my life has been committed to helping myself and helping other people get in touch with who they are and achieve authentic happiness and outrageous success, as you said. I come from a very dysfunctional family, so that's where I started, and now I'm middle-aged, and I bring answers, which is what we're going to be talking about today.
And you're known as the middle-aged answer woman. I love that.
Yes, I am self-named. When I first started my practice in 1988, the branding wasn't a thing, but I became known as the PMS lady because my area of expertise that I talked to people about happened to have been premenstrual syndrome because it was something that I had been through and I had successfully treated my, gotten, the treatment that was required, and I had a ton of information. So that was what I was talking about. And in any case, so people used to call me up and go, hello, are you the PMS lady? And I would say, yes. So in any case, I stopped being the PMS lady a long time ago. A year ago or so, it was like, well, what would I call me now? What do I want people to say when they call me? And so I thought the middle-aged answer woman, because I saw a wonderful skit on Saturday Night Live many years ago, the early 90s, about the middle-aged answer man, and it always stuck with me. And I thought, well, I'm a woman, but I do. I don't tell people what to do. What I do have answers to is how to handle what's going on. So I have lots of answers about how to handle whatever it is that's going on that, people get upset about, people worry about, make people afraid. And so, yes, I've decided that I want people to call me up and say, are you the middle-aged answer woman? And I'll say, yes, I am. And I'll be very happy to engage and, again, help people figure out how to handle life.
Well, you definitely have a great message. But let's go back here because I've talked to you a couple times before, and you've never mentioned that you were once known as the PMS lady. Can you briefly talk about that real quick? I'm intrigued.
Okay, very quick story. All right, so I was in an age when it wasn't cool to be I was very tall and very thin. At 11, I was 5'9", and I weighed 70 pounds. I did not have an eating disorder. My father was 6'5", and weighed maybe 175. My mother was 6 feet and weighed 145. So I come from tall, skinny people. In any case, I was 11 years old. My father found out about a doctor in Boston. This was in the 1960s, and she was helping tall girls not become freakishly tall. And so they thought in the 1960s that was a really cool idea. And so I went and saw Dr. Gertrude Ryersbeck in Boston. I was living in New York City, but my parents brought me up to Boston. And she predicted that I would be 5'11 to 6'3". So I was 11 years old. I was 5'9" and 70 pounds.
Wow.
It all sounded like a really good plan. In any case, fast forward, what it did was she put me on massive hormones. And so I was taking massive amounts of estrogen and progesterone to bring on my menstrual cycle so that I would have a shorter period of time to grow. That was the methodology, the thinking behind this. So I started my periods very, very painfully, and I did that for a number of years. I did not grow. I'm now, actually I'm starting to shrink now, but my full height was 5'9". I did become a normal weight. I'm still tall and thin, but I'm a normal weight. In any case, never had an eating disorder. I'm very lucky. In any case, so once I stopped those hormones when I was about 16, I started at 12, I stopped at about 15 or 16, and I just had the worst menstrual problems that I've ever heard of. I've never known anyone to have a bigger problem, and it took me, fast forward, 17 years to find what was really wrong and to treat it. But I was completely controlled. My life was completely controlled by my periods until I was in my late 20s. And when I finally came out of it, that was when I was able to go to graduate school, which is what I'd always wanted to do, to become a therapist, which is what I did. And then when I opened up my practice, I was now 3 or 4 years into being no longer controlled by my PMS and realized, you know, how helpful, in order to get therapy, which is what I started to do, you really need to have your menstrual cycle under control, because all the therapy that I did wasn't going to change anything because I was just so hormonally crazed. So in any case, so yeah, so that's how it started. But it was, you know, all of it has come originally from my own life experiences and from, generally speaking, the pretty horrible stuff, you know. And now at this stage of my life, I don't have really, really horrible stuff in my life. The stuff that concerns me, I understand that that I can learn from it and that I can handle it. So I'm very grateful for that.
Right, which brings us to the next segment about fear and worry. Did you want to briefly go over what we spoke about on the last one regarding, I think I asked you, what is the difference between worry and fear? That was one of the first things I asked. You want to start with that, and then we'll go on to what you wanted to talk about today.
Excellent, wonderful. Let me just back up just a teeny bit, okay, and lead into what is fear and what is worry. The thing that people get so wrapped up in is, what do I do when I'm upset? And people are constantly getting upset in our world. And people call it stress. People call it all kinds of different things. Now, what we are given are solutions in order to not be stressed out. The problem is, like, meditate, exercise, eat well, drink lots of water. I mean, you know, we're all saying, you know, anyone is saying the same things. This is nothing new. I feel like I'm in a chorus of people and we're all chanting the same stuff. What I see in people is they don't do it and then they feel even worse about the fact that they're not doing what they should do to make themselves feel better when they're feeling really badly. So I believe that if people understand the source and the very beginning of what's happening that leads us to feel so stressed out, to spend so much time worrying, that then they can begin to unravel the pieces that allow us to actually do what is beneficial, like eat well, exercise, so forth and so on, and handle our stress better. The first piece of this is understanding fear and worry. The fear happens. We cannot stop it. There are things in life that are unbelievably scary. It's unbelievably scary. It's always been the truth. And our brains, literally, are programmed to keep us alive and to be on the lookout for the scary things in life, so that we don't die. This happens throughout the brain. It happens unconsciously, and it creates all kinds of responses and reactions, chemical, neural, auditory, so forth. So that's fear, and it comes up all the time because, again, your brain is always operating.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's talk. So you can't stop it. Now let's talk about worry. What worry is the natural outcome from fear. So once your brain registers that there's something scary out there, it starts sending all these chemicals through your body, messages here and there, about what do you have to do in order to stay alive. And then as it moves through your body, then the thoughts come up, and thoughts are worry thoughts, naturally. Oh, my God, what's going to happen? Could this happen? Could that happen? Could the whole thing fall apart? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That we can control. That we can stop. We cannot stop fear. We can stop worry. And it is worry that is what kills people, because they feel as if they're not worrying, they're not being responsible, so they have to worry. And worry has been proven to cause all kinds of negative responses inside the body. It is not healthy to worry. And again, they're negative thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So that was what we talked about last time. There's fear, which is going to happen, and then there's worry. What we also talked about, which is the one last point, and then we can move on to, okay, so what do you do when you know? Now I get that what fear is, and I get what worry is, okay? The thing is that for most of the history of humankind, what we have needed to do is literally stay alive. In our culture, because most of us have housing and shelter and food, we then our survival needs are taken care of, but we still have this brain that's looking for things that might kill us because we're
mm-hmm.
programmed that way. It's the primal brain, the limbic system, the amygdala in particular. So fear happens now. The more comfortable you are, the more you're still going to have to worry, but the more you worry about things that, in fact, the worry isn't going to help at all.
Joanne, what are some of the symptoms from so much worry, like from stress?
Let's see. I made a promise to myself I wasn't going to say, you know, but I just said it. I probably have said it before that. it's stress. Worry is stress.
Right.
If you think about it, again, you have these responses. You're going along in your life. You're driving your car. Somebody cuts you off. Your brain goes, oh, my God, because, again, there's a potential for death there because it could be a car accident. So there's the survival piece. The thing is, though, that there was no accident, and you are left with still these chemicals coursing through your body to keep you alive, and it subsides. The knowledge that you are not in an accident subsides, but the body is still in this mode of, you know, what's going on, what's going on, what can I do to make myself okay? What you then do is you get angry because, again, oh my, look at that jerk. He was driving whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So now you are angry. If you think about it, that's stress. You
exactly.
come home at night from work and the family is upset and the kids are fighting and they don't want to do their homework and you're stressed out and your partner is stressed out and the bills need to be paid and the laundry and everything else. And people, what do? They start yelling. That's
mm-hmm.
stress. They start crying. That is stress. Not that there aren't other reasons too, but I'm talking about, again, at work. Again, it's all stress. So worry are the negative thoughts that come up from fear that are completely under your control. They do nothing but make you feel badly about yourself. It's a negative internal conversation.
And what can we do to stop that internal conversation that's so negative?
Okay. That's what we're going to talk about. And there's a few steps. Today we're going to take the first step. The first step is noticing when the fear shows up, what the worried thoughts are. Noticing that connection, note and separating them, is the first and most important thing that people can do. Because you cannot change anything until you can recognize within yourself when you are in this loop that is not beneficial for anybody.
So it's like cut off after you feel the fear and you start to feel worried. You mentioned breathing in and breathing out and cutting it off.
Well, let me shift that a little bit. It's you're going
sure.
along in your life, and the next thing you know, you're angry about something. Stop. Oh, what angry thoughts am I having? And then you articulate those to yourself. And then you say, all right, well, I was afraid of something. What was that? What just happened that made me afraid? Okay, what was the fear there? Because, again, something happens, and it could be inside yourself. It could be that you're sitting there and you're thinking about an unpleasant situation or something that you're anticipating being unpleasant in the future. So it's observing the self and understanding and looking at the fear happening,
mm-hmm.
what's that, and then the worry, which again is the negative internal conversation. What are you saying to yourself? So here's a few things. One thing, really important for the women listeners, the thing that women do, and I think we might have spoken about this before, Janice, because it's one of my things that I so want to get out to people. Women constantly say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Right.
They walk past to me. I mean, it's not like they're just doing it to, I bumped into a woman the other day. I bumped into her. I was not paying attention. She apologized. I looked at her. I said, no, it was, I bumped into you. What I offer to people is say, excuse me. But again, this apology piece, I'm sorry. So one of the things that we do is we put ourselves down. So back to how much do we apologize to other people? Just when excuse me would in fact be more beneficial and the truth.
Mm-hmm.
The other piece also is, do you ever speak as negatively to yourself as you would to anybody else? And most people
would
say, no,
that's key.
I would never speak to anybody the way I speak to myself. How many times do you drop something and go, darn it, you mm-hmm. idiot, you bump yourself.
Wow. Right. I think you should repeat that. That was really, I've never really looked at it that way. Can you repeat that to our listeners?
Okay, let me try. The part about that we never would speak to other people the way that we speak to ourselves. Again, the internal negative conversation. It all comes under the heading of worry.
Mm-hmm.
You're not good enough. You don't have enough. Again, it's about the past. It's about the future, and it's about what are you going to do about it? What should you have done? What could you have done? I know one of my things is I write emails or letters in my head to people that I feel like if I could just say one more thing to them, what would I say? And I just do that. Well, I have come to realize that as it is a complete waste of time because, A, I don't do it. So that's a life experience. I don't do it. And why would I think and spend so much time writing these notes in my head that I don't send? And yet,
right.
inside my head, I have these whole entire conversations. So what do? I notice when it shows up. Oh, there I go. I'm thinking about that again. Was there something that was just going on that made me feel afraid, that distracted me, that made me go there again? If there is, okay. If there isn't,
mm-hmm.
And that's when I lead into what you said. You stop and you breathe in and you breathe out. Because the only way, it's why people say calm down when, you know, it's what you hyperventilate when you get upset. A panic attack is the, you know, one of the ultimate forms of not breathing.
Right.
So, and again, and what do people say? Breathe, breathe. Women giving birth, what do? You breathe to get that baby out. So what should we do is we should meditate. What is meditate? Meditating is calming down. How do you calm down? You just sit there and you breathe. Well, I want to encourage people, it's great to meditate. The thing is, though, you're breathing all of the time. So when you notice that fear comes up, or you especially notice that you are speaking to yourself, the internal conversation is negative, and you are speaking to other to yourself the way you would never speak to anyone, you stop and you go, that's interesting. There I go, and you breathe in and you breathe out. And people want to know, well, then what? Then what? Then what do I do? You do it again. Because we are all, to one degree or another, absolute masters at feeling fear and then worrying about it and going off on a negative internal conversation. We're masters at it. So when people say, you know, well, I try that all the time. You know, I keep trying. What I say is, wait a minute, slow it down. A baby is not born and then all of a sudden gets up and walks. They lie there for a while. We are not fast developers. It's not in human nature. It takes time. So another thing that I say to people, be patient with your impatience.
That's another good thing. So you said stop the internal conversation and stop.
Observe the notice it when it happens. Notice the internal negative conversation when it happens and breathe in and breathe out. Look at, is there anything going on that made me feel afraid? And really say to yourself, look at what I'm worried about. Is it something in the past? Is it something in the future? What's going on here? There's also a piece around looking at what your feelings are, what your thoughts are. Those are those two pieces. Then what you believe is going to happen. People worry a lot about what's going to happen. And if you're worrying about what's going to happen, it means that you are looking into the future negatively. Well, you have none of us have any idea what's going to happen. None of us. And what I say is, well, what are you doing now about creating, to the best of your ability, a positive future? Are you eating healthfully? Are you sleeping? Are you living within your financial means?
Well, it's really about controlling our future and being intentional about it and setting goals, and so we can stop the negative thoughts and the worry about the future. And I've started to tell my children, you know, what's the worst that can happen? I think my mom used to say that too. What's really the worst that can happen? And 99.9% of the time, the worst doesn't happen. So we're really
absolutely.
It's a lesson in futility.
Oh no, and absolutely. And again, and we are so, our children even more so than we, and we even more so than our parents. We are being fed nonstop fear-based information. Everything is out there to make us feel not good enough, or make us feel afraid that things aren't, that we are not safe. The not good enough is you're not thin enough, you're not rich enough, you don't have whatever that piece is, okay? And then we're not, the world is not safe. And the world is not safe, and you are not safe. And the reality is, in many ways, the world has always been unsafe, no different. This is just now. How dare we be so egocentric to think that now is that much different? It's not. And the essence of are we not good enough, the answer is, yeah, we are. We're plenty good enough. So again, but we are fed constantly. Social media, I have a 19-year-old girl. I'm so glad she's 19 already. I didn't have to deal with the cell phone and the internet in elementary school. I don't know, you know, I was just reading the other day. 10 is the age. So again, so we worry negatively about the future, and what I encourage people to do is learn how to see it, observe it, stop it, and then what we'll talk about next time is, and then what do you actually do? How do you, what do you replace worry with? Because that's the thing that most people run up against the most that stops them. Because again, of course I have to worry. You know, my parents are aging. I've got a mortgage. I've got three kids I have to put through college. And what I'm saying is, no, that's what's happening in your life. Worrying about it is what you're doing. And I guarantee you, worrying is not going to get you where you want to go. Worrying is inaction, pretending to be action.
I like that. No, worrying is inaction. And you said see it, observe it, and stop it. And then next time, what will you be focusing on about fear and worry?
What we'll be talking about is, as if people practice and focus on seeing the worry, seeing the fear, separating the two out, understanding that worry is negative internal thought and that they can control that. They can't stop the fear. The brain is all primed, can't stop it. That then what will come next is, what do you actually do instead of worrying? If you stop it and see it over the next few days, then you'll be ready to actually make a change, which is replacing the worry with positive behaviors, positive thoughts. And how do you do that so that you're maintaining a realistic approach to what is happening in your life? Because, again,
well,
you do have aging parents, and you do have three children that you have to put through college.
Mm-hmm. So all of those realities are not going to go away. It's just how we deal with them. So what do we do instead? We'll talk about that next time. And this has been really helpful to me personally, and I'm certain to our listeners. How can they get in touch with you, Joanne?
I am writing my book right now, and so my website has my phone number on it, and that is the best way to get to me. People can also find me on LinkedIn if they're interested in looking at what it is that I've done professionally. But my website is www.joannduggan.com or www.themiddleagedwoman.com. Again, the middle-aged woman, A-G-E-D, aged woman. And my cell phone number, which is the best way to get me, is 617-584-7001. 617-584-7001. People can text me. And in terms of special offers, if people want to call me and they say that they've listened here, I'm happy to have a half-hour conversation with them about fear and worry. I would be delighted to help people understand that, again, fear happens. It's part of what life is all about, and we're just getting bombarded with fear-based messages constantly. But the worry, we do that to ourselves, and we can stop that. If I can stop worrying, anyone can stop worrying. And my clients are no longer worrying. They are handling what is happening extremely well.
Yeah, this has been so enlightening, and I'm sure our listeners have felt the same. And I wanted to reiterate, it's www.joannduggan, and it's spelled J-O-A-N-N-E-D-O-U-G-A-N .com. And that's how they can get in touch with you, and I'd invite our listeners to. This has been very helpful. Thank you so much for being on the show once again, Joanne.
Well, thank you, Janice, so much for being such a terrific interviewer and allowing women an opportunity to come and share in ways that are, I know, helping other people. So thank you so much for the opportunity, and thank you so much for what you're doing.
It's been my pleasure. Have a great afternoon. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Ladies, I am so happy that you tuned in today and learned from our amazing, fantastic female guests, and I hope you recognize this as an opportunity to pass their knowledge on to your daughters and friends and share the wisdom of the ages. I'll talk to you again soon, and in the meantime, let's lift each other up, spread the love, and share an attitude of gratitude.
You've been listening to the Tell Janice Radio Show. If you'd like to be a guest or suggest a guest for the show, Or if you would like to nominate a fabulous female for a shout-out by Janice on the live show, please visit www.telljanice.com. Please share this episode with your social network and help us lift women up. Join us next week for another episode of Tell Janice.